Well, hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Join me, Sam Harris, on my journey of curiosity and growth. I have conversations with some of the world's most fascinating humans, from billionaires to Olympians, and most everyone in between, such as suspiciously happy people and even a hitman. Success isn't just for successful people, it is earned and you can earn it too. I find out how ordinary people become extraordinary to fuel your own growth mindset. Welcome, Maddie Tuchipaska.
Yeah.
Good. This is going really well. Best podcast yet. So you are the founder of rockpapercopy.com, a digital marketing agency. You've also started three businesses beforehand, and this one you started to become a nomad and live the dream, making dollar whilst traveling the world and working from a laptop. Yeah, it sounds like you've got a ton of experience, so I'm pretty excited to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It's really nice chatting to you.
Well, we'll see what you think afterwards. Glad that you seem to be happy about it. So let's dive in from the start. So you're from Poland, you say, and then you came to England to start your businesses, or did you start your first businesses like at home?
No, I have been in Poland since 2004, and my first business I launched in 2007. So in 2004, it was the time when Poland just joined the European Union, and I didn't really even know about it, but I just had this kind of really strong urge just to leave Poland. I was desperate to leave Poland behind, and it was just coincidence that basically next month Poland joined the European Union, and I just found myself among other thousands of people from Poland and other Eastern European countries coming to England, and I loved it from day one, so I knew it's my place, and then I launched my first business 3 years later.
Okay, cool. So what did you do for the first few years when you were moving into the UK?
Oh, I was living a classical immigrant lifestyle, which is working as a receptionist, housekeeper, and serving breakfasts.
Yeah, that's interesting.
In a hotels, yeah.
Okay, so you had some ideas for a business. What was your first business idea, and how did you find starting that as an immigrant?
My first business idea was selling online. So I started selling online just bits and bobs on eBay. eBay back then was very easy to sell online. Later on, I think they changed the ownership 2006, 2007 to the company. I believe it's in Belgium, the new company. And they started changing the rules for sellers, and eBay became very, very hostile for sellers, very hostile platform, because their new rules meant that your listings could be just removed, or your listings could be hidden for a month if you didn't comply with certain rules or didn't make the quota of some kind of reviews and so on. So that was definitely an interesting experience. But because eBay changed, I decided to start selling on my own platform, and I launched my first business with EKM. I think it was PowerShop. It was a great platform, but later on that also became a little bit limiting, and obviously I wanted to change the platform. But yeah, I was selling teenage clothing. I'm not sure if you remember this kind of punk emo scene clothing.
I remember, yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah, so it was definitely fun. It was so much fun running this company, because it's just reading about these trends, going to trade shows, going to fashion shows, and just hanging out with those people was just so much fun. And I did it for about 4 or 5 years, and I sold this company. And the website is still on, which is great, because I put a lot of effort in this website. And I got to the first page of Google for my target keyword. And although I sold the website 7 years ago, I'm still on the first page for this keyword. So this is quite good, yeah.
Cool. So how did you go about selling the company?
I didn't use any particular platform like you have Flipkart or something like that these days. I think there was a section on the EKM forum, which is the platform that my website was on, a section for people who want to sell their websites to other EKM members. And I was approached by another lady who was interested in buying this website. So I sold it based on, obviously, on my sales, based on the stock that I could send to her. And it was pretty straightforward. So it was more organic growth. I didn't use any special platform to do that.
Sure. What is EKM exactly?
EKM is similar to Shopify, but they are based in the UK. It's a little bit smaller company, but they mainly specialize in UK online stores, in UK businesses.
Okay, yeah, sounds cool. I don't know if you've thought much into like the recent kickback against fashion in general and the fact that we buy a lot of clothes these days that we really don't need, and it's actually a massive contributor to climate change and things. Were you even like aware of the problems that fashion was causing at the time?
That is such a great question. I don't think fashion was causing as much problem at the time as it is causing now because of the dropshipping, but it definitely started causing problem midway. That's why I was switching from massive wholesalers who were importing from China. I was switching to brands who produced their clothing in the UK and produced their clothing in either themselves, although they were sourcing from factories based in the UK. But as I grew and I could invest more, that was definitely quite an important issue for me. And I really didn't want to deal with brands that import from China, not only because of this particular issue, but also because of the quality. My branding was to really connect with or rely on repeat business. And obviously people who buy something and the quality isn't there, obviously they're not going to buy from the same place again. So I think sustainable fashion helps not only environment, but also helps the businesses just be more profitable.
Yeah, definitely. It is interesting, like the problems with the regulations, and you can say made in the UK, but it's kind of like going to a restaurant and having food that's made in the UK because of it was made in the restaurant where you're at. It doesn't mean that any of the items in your meal has come from the UK. It's just because the chef made it. So if you get a shirt that was made in the UK, all of the components of the shirt could have come from somewhere else. It still has the tag made in the UK. So it's not still like as ethical as you think it is. And then there's like just cheap fashion, people just buy things to use for like a few times and they buy something else. And why do we need to have so many things in our lives when we really don't, which is more the problem. And yeah, it's difficult when you run a business which relies on selling people stuff when they don't need so much stuff, basically.
Yes, but I think it comes down to really educating, maybe not people, but educating, you know, the needs, or because it all comes down to what we see in the media. You know, if we watch TV shows like Kardashians and other shows where everybody, or, you know, Instagram,
influencers. Huge part of the problem. Yeah.
Yes, because
they sell you something which is not useful if you've got stuff that you already are fine with, technically speaking.
Oh, absolutely. And brands only follow the need in the market. Obviously, they won't go against the need.
They make you want stuff by advertising it and marketing it to you and making you think that you should have more stuff rather than, you know, if I run Primark, I'm not going to make any money if I spend a load of money on adverts telling you how to reuse your items from last year and not buy anything new, am I? It would be bonkers.
Absolutely. But I don't think it limits only to fashion, Sam, because even if you buy a mobile phone, they especially
problem.
Make, it's the same problem. They just create low quality, but it's obviously well known.
And all industries, like even food. I mean, we never used to snack every other hour of the day. We don't need half as much food as we eat. This is why we're getting obese, but people make money because they can sell us more food and find more time windows when we can be eating this food that we don't need. And if they can make money selling us food, they will still sell us food. And the whole economy, really, you know, who needs to go on holiday to Thailand when they could just go for a walk next door or have a nice weekend away at the seaside, like half an hour away. But, you know, they make more money selling you a flight to go all the way there. But this is probably getting off on a bit of a tangent. But anyway, the world's messed up and this is a problem. And we've agreed. So back to SEO. So, yes, you now run digital marketing consultancy and... Mm-hmm. So you started this business because of you've got experience in SEO and you figured that you could like run a legitimate business helping people with this. So what do you think were your biggest insights that you thought you could help people with that they were getting wrong?
The biggest insight is that when you are trying to get traffic to your website, you often go for the keywords that are the most popular, but they might bring you traffic in terms of numbers, but they won't necessarily turn into conversion. which is sales. And it is a problem that is not only in terms of organic traffic, but also in terms of Facebook ads or Google ads. So let's say if you are selling woolen sweaters and you target keyword red woolen sweater or something like that, you tend to forget about the buyer intention. So if someone goes to Google and types for this kind of term, red woolen sweater, they might not necessarily want to buy straight away. They might just be doing the research. They might be searching for a knitting pattern. They might be searching for an idea for the Halloween outfit or something like that. So you definitely have to dig a little deeper and focus on more specific keyword that you know that will be typed by someone who is actually actively looking to buy something online. And because people, when they search online, when they go to Google, they divide into groups. And in SEO, we refer to them as the buying phase or the purchase phase. So for example, the first phase is just browsing, and then the second phase is discovery, and the third phase is purchase, if it's obviously the purchasing channel. And you want to focus on the keywords that people would use in the last stage. So the example of this kind of keyword would be if someone would be looking for red ladies fitted woolen sweater with roll neck. That's definitely more specific. And it tells you that someone is willing to buy, they've got this credit card in hand. And if you've got traffic from this kind of search, it's more likely to convert. So I would definitely recommend going for the quality keywords as opposed to the quantity keywords.
Yeah, I think it's nice to measure like high intent keywords of people that actually have the intention of buying rather than people just browsing, as you highlighted. Cool. So that's mostly what you help companies with then?
Keyword research and obviously the website optimization. I recently started doing Facebook ads to the mix. So I had quite a big success with Facebook ads, although I've only started using them a few months ago. I really didn't want to touch them for years because I just thought that they are as complicated as Google Ads. But yeah, they're still manageable at this stage. I'm sure they will be more complicated later on. And I think, yeah, they're definitely very, very cheap if you know what you're doing. But yeah, they're definitely powerful. And what else I'm helping with? Obviously blogging, because blogging is so powerful. People don't realize how much powerful a good blog post is. For example, I think in March or in April, I created the blog post and I was on the first page within 4 days with this blog post. And wow, it's now my most popular landing page right after homepage. And I didn't really do anything with this blog post apart from publishing it. So I didn't really promote it. I didn't really create any backlinks to it. But I definitely don't agree that you need backlinks to rank on the first page, because I've never focused on backlinks.
Interesting. That's a bit of an alternative viewpoint. So you would say you focus more on just really good content, and that Google will like find that if it's got a unique keyword and it's just classic, like high-quality content?
Absolutely. And as long as you know how to optimize the blog post, as long as you know what you're doing, it definitely...
Okay. Can you go into that? How would you optimize a blog post? What does that mean?
You would start from a keyword research. And I have recently created a guest post for someone that I reviewed this method. But you start from keyword research and you find keyword that is maybe not very general in your niche, but a little bit more specific. For example, the blog post that I have mentioned is an analysis of the breadcrumbs. So breadcrumb navigation SEO. So this is a complete blog post about the benefits of breadcrumbs. Obviously, what are breadcrumbs, how to use them. And once you find this particular keyword, you analyze the pages or the websites that are already ranking on the first page. And if you see that the content is nothing special, you have to think, how can you create blog posts that is 10 times more helpful, more useful, and more accurate, more detailed than those articles? Once you do that, once you optimize it with your target keyword, Google will rank you, because Google's first priority is to solve a problem and show websites that solve the problem that their user is looking for help with. So if someone is looking for an answer to role of breadcrumbs in SEO and they find it, all of the possible questions they might have on the topic on this particular blog post, there's no way that your blog post won't be on the first page. there's just no way, because if you are better than all the other websites on the first page, it's just not naturally that you will be on the first page.
And yeah, the algorithm, it measures when people go onto your page and it sees that they spend a lot more time and they like go up and down and they read the whole thing. Whereas if someone goes onto your page and it's like a crap blog post, they'll just leave straight away and come back and Google goes, hey, this post was useless because the person never actually stayed on the page, kind of thing.
Yes, and also what the user does after he leaves your website also counts, because if he leaves your website and clicks on another website because it tells Google that they didn't find the answer on your blog post. So that's why bounce rate is not always the best indication if your blog post or if your podcast answered the question, because if they might click back and obviously abandon the search, do something else, it still tells Google that it's a good result.
Cool. So for anyone listening, if you ever happen to click on one of my posts, don't go and click on the other posts afterwards. That's an entirely new search, because it's clear you found the answer.
Just close the laptop.
Yep. Just throw it in the bin. The job's done.
Job's done.
Okay, cool. So what would you say has been the most interesting campaign that you've worked on?
I think I would have to go back to my first business, Little Black Cherry. I just loved working on this one. So I think definitely working with the Scene Kids, Emo Kids market back then and promoting to them. They were just such a sweet kids and it was so nice just to promote to them. So I would say anything with some kind of alternative, quirky fashion is definitely up my street, yeah.
I think we did have some other things to talk about with SEOs, and you said you're quite knowledgeable about the recent Google updates, which I am not quite knowledgeable about. And it would be interesting to hear a bit more what's happened with that.
So Google Core update was rolled out last week. It meant that some of the industries, especially health industry, and I think the gambling industry websites were mainly affected. It is because not obviously all websites, but the websites or the businesses that don't directly inform people about the possible hazards of using them or of using their services. So I think the transparency of information was the main issue with this kind of update, because the Google creates, I think it obviously changes algorithms almost every day. I heard that they roll out two new algorithms every day, but obviously the algorithm changes, such as Panda or it was Penguin and Hummingbird, they are not being created or they're not being rolled out every single year, but obviously they're quite massive and they've got more impact than those smaller updates.
Cool. So for most of us, it's probably not a problem unless we're in that kind of industry then.
Well, this particular update was only sort of noticeable in those industries, but obviously any other update, it affects all websites.
Okay, cool. What do you think is going to be the next big thing in marketing?
Anything organic, anything that is user-generated is always going to be next big thing, because that's why those influencers have got such impact, because their content isn't created by brands. It is created by normal people. So I think going even more au naturel when it comes to marketing, as opposed to creating this kind of fake content, is going to be big. Also, creating content that feels like an article, not like an ad, it definitely will be big going forward.
Okay. What would you say has been the best book that's helped you with your journey?
Well, there were two that I remember. The first one was Rich Dad Poor Dad. So I think almost everyone is familiar with it. It's Robert Kiyosaki. And obviously his take on your attitude to obviously financial education.
That's a good book. What do you think you learned from that book more specifically? Like, what do you think it changed in you that made you to be more successful?
The one thing is that obviously you have to pay yourself first. So you have to focus on the investing in the future first, and then obviously focusing on more pressing matters later. And the one that I'm still sort of, I didn't get to this point, but I really admire Robert Kiyosaki, that the money that he spends only from the interest that his savings are making. So he's not spending money from his own savings. but he's spending money from the interest that his savings earning. And I think it's a pretty good achievement. So yeah, I would love to go get there.
I had some issues with that book, to be honest. It was quite inspiring in many ways, but also I felt he doesn't completely talk at the level of the people that he's trying to inspire. In terms of, he's saying that to get rich, it's this super simple formula that you just invest in assets and you never have liabilities, which is really easy to say. But if you haven't got enough money to spend on assets because if you spend all your money on liabilities, because if you have your rent to pay and everything, how can you ever invest in assets? And it's a bit like harsh and he just makes it sound too easy. And he's also, he talks to you like you're being stupid if you're paying tax. I'm like, I'm sorry, if I've got a job and I'm paying tax, it's all well and good telling me to pretend like I'm a rich person and not pay tax anymore. But like, it seems a bit bonkers. And yeah, I felt there's a few fundamental issues there with his book. But otherwise, it was actually a really good book and I did find it kind of inspiring. And some of his principles were very good around his mindsets and stuff. But yes, those bits I thought were annoying. But I would still recommend any person read it if they have hours in their life, which everyone does.
I definitely agree with your point of view, and I think it definitely makes sense. And I would say that while this book is very valuable, and I think you'll have to take out of this book something for yourself, but I do not think you will get to the level of wealth following his advice. And I don't think it's an opinion well publicized, but I think he mainly became rich because of his coaching, not because of the advice, his own advice
exactly.
That he's following. Yeah.
This is kind of one of my worries with the podcast is, and I've been quite successful, but I feel like I need to make like a proper big business before I like get the podcast any bigger because I'll feel like a fraud else. Because I don't want to sort of get stuck with it. I was just talking to one of my mentors today about it. And it's like, hey, Matt, Sam, just nailed down the podcast. It's going really well. I'm like, yeah, but if the podcast gets bigger now, it will be kind of more successful than my other things. And it feels like I'm just successful by talking about success, which isn't really like the same as starting a big business and knowing these things. So yeah, I feel my own urge to actually do like walk the walk rather than just talk the talk kind of thing. And I definitely agree that with your point, like I think a lot of his success has come from just talking about it and like telling people what to do and selling things. And his co-author, Sharon Lectures, she's a bit in like some of the stuff she does is kind of pyramid scheme-y and like selling people things of like, oh, you can definitely guarantee success. Just like take my other like coaching course about this other thing and it'll be ultimate wealth will come to you. And you're like, guys, I think why aren't you just running a business if you're so good at making so much money? And a lot of people like find are actually not so good, but some of them have really good principles and books and the whole pyramid scheme stuff. A lot of it is really good, like marketing philosophies and things behind it. You know, they are running like huge businesses, but it's just sort of fundamentally wrong and bad at the same time. But it's quite fascinating. I'm kind of infiltrating into a pyramid scheme at the moment and getting involved and learning all that stuff. And that's going to come out on the podcast when I come clean. But for now, it's all undercover.
Interesting. Yeah.
Anyway, so you have a second book.
Yeah, the second book was actually quite a big discovery. I wouldn't say that it actually made a good impact. I would say that it made quite a negative impact, but it nevertheless made an impact. So it is The Millionaire Fastlane, Crack the Code to Wealth and Leverage for a Lifetime by Emma J. DeMarco. I just found this listing on Amazon, so I was looking for the author. While he has got a certain following and he has got a certain community behind his lesson or his approach, I wouldn't vote personally behind this method, but I think it worked for a number of people.
Like a bit of a salesman and like it's maybe selling you things that are easy, like, oh, just give me £10 and instantly you'll be a millionaire kind of thing. And maybe there's a bit more to it. And certainly into things that are all about like, okay, what's the hard way to become successful and what's the boring way of actually doing it properly kind of thing. And rather than like, oh, just take these two simple steps and like life will be simply simple and fast. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's because we live in this kind of fast food lifestyle. We think that when we see all those rich people on the media, which they're not necessarily might be rich in real life, but on Instagram they flash their jewelry or cars or something like that and houses. And obviously, whenever you go to YouTube, you see, I think that they sort of tailor to what you want to watch. But I end up seeing so many ads about these get rich quick schemes. And there's so many of those people creating content. I'm just thinking, you know, because people don't want to hear about the thing that you have to actually put some work if you want to get rich. They're just looking for some kind of magic recipe and they think that those people know.
Magic formula and stuff. And
magic formula.
It's pretty exciting saying, oh, you just got to work and keep on working and keep on working and keep on working and keep on working. And it gets a bit boring. It's like, oh, just take this one course and you'll be like me driving up to this huge mansion with like your Lamborghini. And life will be brilliant and fabulous. And look, there's babes everywhere giving me beer. It sounds great. When you find out that guy just rented the car and like the girls, some models he paid for the day because of his, like just selling this course that's actually going to make him a millionaire, but he's just selling you a dream, then you're suddenly like, oh, maybe this isn't quite so good. But you've already lost your £10 and then you don't think about it again. That's like
£10 would be good news. Sometimes those courses
some of the £100s. Ridiculous.
Yeah,
I went to a conference and it was like full of these people selling these things, and like they present their magic formula scheme, which you never quite got explained to you. And then like at the end, they like, and today offering you this special offer for only like $1,500, down from like the normal 5,000, you can get it. But there's only 60 seconds left, and there's only 10 spaces, and like there are people like getting up and running to the back just to give them like $1,000 straight away. And you're like, oh my god, please don't! Oh, it was awful.
Oh my goodness. Definitely. And I think it's everywhere. I think there, you don't even have to go to some special conference. They're like, those kind of events happen in your local hotels or, you know, anywhere. I've attended so many of those events and they always have got the same structure.
Yeah, I wish there was a better way to like report them and actually get these people arrested or something, because it's such scamming and awful.
It is a scam, yeah.
Yeah, it's something I really want to do something about. Hence why I'm doing this infiltration into the pyramid scheme that I'm currently doing. But it's still like they kind of try and say,
so you're doing infiltration, you're not taking part, because I thought what you said that you're taking part, so you're doing infiltration. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, well, I don't see how I can like actually sell something to someone else, but I'm getting involved with everything that I can and learning as much and trying to, I might be going to Vegas to fly out to like one of the legal, one of the heads of one of these schemes to talk to and stuff, and talk to him about how great he is and stuff, when actually I'm kind of being sarcastically, yeah, whatever. It's going to be fun. Going to find stuff out.
Interesting. But is it, you're recording it or you're doing it as some kind of
I'm going to try and record as much of it as possible and make a bit of a documentary out of it.
Okay.
It'd be fascinating.
Ooh, exciting. Cool.
Yeah, definitely. All right, nice. Then, so I said, we guess we haven't really spoken too much about like mindsets. Can you think about any time where you felt really down, but you were able to turn your mindset around?
Yes, absolutely. So it was 2015. It was before I started Rock Paper Copy. So definitely it was a bit of the downtime for me. And yeah, I had to put a serious amount of effort to turn it around. It is not easy. It is not easy because obviously your negative thoughts are, I think they're, you don't even have to try. They appear automatically and you have to keep fighting for those positive thoughts. But meditation definitely helps. Meditation definitely helps me to keep control of my mindset. And yeah, it's a powerful thing. You just get in your life what you're thinking about, and you have to be your own friend, I suppose.
Yeah, this is really hard. And certainly I found like when I haven't got a specific idea and when I probably need the help the most is usually when I don't have the mentors to help me. But when I'm already like on track and I'm going in a direction, there's usually someone there like to talk about my business and like take the next step. But when I'm kind of lost or something and feeling depressed, there's sort of the time when there is no one being like, oh, I could do like 10 different things, but no one really can quite understand your situation or your problems, then it is really more about like searching within yourself about how to solve it. And yeah, it can get kind of deep quite quickly. But yeah, books are always good, and having a good friend to talk to about things is useful. Okay, then on to the subject of Brexit. Do you think it's going to be a problem when, because it was so good for you to suddenly just be able to come to Britain and like become like a useful member of our country. And do you think we're going to lose out a lot when we leave the European Union?
That is a great question. And I think the opinions are very divided. I think the economy would be definitely affected, although maybe it's very black and white opinion, because there are very rich countries in Europe that aren't part of European Union. So maybe it won't be as bad for Britain.
I think both directions are completely overselling, like the doomsayers and the well things. But certainly in terms of like science and things, it's a bit of a catastrophe. And just for me, like, it's like the personal, like, not crossing the borders, as in like students should be able to just go do an Erasmus year somewhere else and like learn about the world a bit more. And that's something we certainly won't have. And like having people from different nations is a great thing, although we actually don't have as much immigration as you think we might anyway, compared to like Germany or something, where it's a lot more going on. And I just feel it's a bit sort of rude, like a middle finger up to the rest of Europe, who is actually going to be fine without us, and we're just kind of burning some of our own bridges and probably won't make any more money than we need. And it's just like a massive distraction from much bigger issues like climate change. And instead we're like running around without a clue what's going on, because we're dealing with this issue that is really quite unimportant compared to much bigger things going on the planet. And it's just a bit of a waste of time. So anyway, on that note, yet I am talking about Brexit instead of solving the wider issues with the planet, which is the ironic problem about the whole thing, life. Anyway, is there anything else you want me to ask you, or anything you want to ask me?
I'm definitely intrigued about the mentors thing you mentioned. I would love to find out more. I mean, do you seek mentors from people who are mentors, or do you just find someone who is willing to share information freely? Or do you mean like mentors that already have a content that they produce, or do you seek them out to meet them personally, or do you connect with them online? How do you actually find your mentors?
Yeah, I've just always sought mentors, because I just, from forever, see why I run a podcast, I guess, is I've always enjoyed just talking to people that know more about the world than I do on anything, or even people that kind of know less about most things. They still know something that I don't know, so there's always stuff to learn from everyone, I kind of believe. But mentors specifically, as in, I just found it easier when you have like a specific vehicle, like a business, something that you're doing, you can kind of ask for advice on that. And then when it's more like your life and you're being a bit unsure, it's not quite so easy to find people, or can be a bit inconsistent. And I guess I should have been more active about having specific mentors, which I used to have with my first business. And since then, I've been a bit random, as in I've done the podcast, which has been great. I've had so much life lessons about everything, but it's like the specific in the moment thing that I'm asking, it's not more deeper questions about my life and long term, like someone there to set your goals each month and like help you along and guide you a bit more. So I guess I've been missing more of that, like more personal mentoring on a consistent basis, because I think that's actually quite useful. And same with like, you know, friends. It's great to have like a random, be able to make friends with any random person you meet when you're traveling as a nomad, but you kind of miss the friends that know you from when you were like a kid and can remember like the differences that you were, and sort of can put things a bit more in the context of your life of what you should be doing rather than just right then and there, if that makes sense. Yeah, did you find that as a problem when you were traveling as a digital nomad, that you kind of missed like permanent friends and permanent place to be, or did you just try and like focus on the good parts and like not think about the bad?
I definitely missed it, but yeah, I wasn't trying to focus on that. I missed this being grounded. Being in one place and obviously connecting with the people who know you best. But on the other hand, I enjoy being in a new place. I enjoy being sort of a bit anonymous in a new place. And finding your way around. So yeah, I suppose it's two sides.
Definitely. It's a bit of a harsh irony that it's like the new places that are great, but then it's like the consistency that's also great that you miss. But it's also quite nice that it sort of, on a sort of mindset, it gets you out of any mindsets that you're stuck in. So if you're always doing the same day in, day out routine and you're not meeting new people or you're not having like different types of conversation, it really opens you up to completely new ways of thinking, and you can kind of reinvent yourself every single city that you arrive in and try different things and stuff. Whereas I find that I meet a lot more women when I'm traveling than I do when I'm at home, because if I'm too busy to bother going out or do anything, and and kind of doing whatever job I'm doing or whatever when I'm in London. Whereas if when I'm traveling, you know, I'll go to a bar and like speak to random people and I'll get involved in some like dance class or something. And next thing I know, like, you know, I'm meeting cool people. And that's something I should do when I'm at home, but I just never do because of, I'm kind of in the mindset of like working too much.
Suppose when you're in a new place, you have got this kind of mindset, I have to go out there, I have to do it, I have to. And yeah, I remember when I first arrived to England, and then I remember that I found a job almost right away, and I spoke with my friend who was British, and she couldn't find a job, you know, for months. And she was like, yeah, because it's easier for you emigrant. And I couldn't understand it, but now I can see what she meant. Yeah, it's about your energy. Yeah,
definitely. It's about how you perceive things and what you're used to and stuff. It's weird. Okay, cool. Then one other thing they want to ask was, what advice would you give to yourself like 5 years ago that you have learned now and wish you had learned earlier?
Well, 5 years ago, I would say don't be afraid to take risks, because sometimes a change is good, and sometimes even living in a country can change your mindset, because sometimes we end up living in a bubble and we think that it's all doom and gloom, and then we go to another country and we think that world is a good place by the end of the day. So yeah, don't be afraid to risk everything if you can, obviously. Drop everything and just go for it, because it's exciting, isn't it? When you just, you know, go somewhere new and you just have to start everything from scratch. I mean, I love this kind of situation, but obviously you can't do it every few years.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You haven't listened to the Learned Helplessness episode that I did. I think it was like episode 22 or something. It was basically all about that, and I'm pretty hugely into it. And shooting to win rather than shooting to not lose is such a big thing. And like taking the risks rather than just sort of sticking with what you've got, you can massively improve your life. And yeah, on that note, thanks so much for all the advice and the time. And yeah, so rockpapercopy.com, we can find out more about you. Is anything else we should know before you go?
Absolutely. If you have online business, especially if you have e-commerce business, I currently offer free website critiques and free SEO analysis. If you go to my website, you can find the form at the top of the homepage. So it's www.rockpapercopy.com.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Stay in touch.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learned by contacting us through the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com. And feel free to connect with us or our guests, or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is @GrowthMindsetPodcast, or follow me @SamJamSnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll make me very happy. And with that, keep learning and keep growing.